All right, everyone. Hello and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Matic, and I'm joined by my buddy, JJ Zacharias, and you guys probably know him as the late round QB. We just having all my bros on the show, you know, having JJ on the show, having Reeves on the show, just had Graham on the show. Just want to really get into the weeds with Dynasty and with prospects. So I guess quick note here, if we say something that is definitively disproved by the combine, we're recording this the morning of Thursday, February 27th. So maybe we say something and some prospect just has like an utterly horrible combine. And if so, we apologize for that. But JJ, thanks for being on the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always good to talk to you.
I think the first thing that we should talk about is why it is so important to model prospects. Cause I think you can get through the first round of any dynasty rookie draft without modeling at all. I think you could just look at draft capital and be like, oh, you know, this guy was fine at the combine. He got drafted 86th overall. He's probably a good pick at 110 or whatever. I don't really think it goes much deeper than that, but you know, if you're just drafting the chalk in your dynasty rookie drafts, you're probably not going to find, you know, the next whoever, you know, the next Kareem Hunt,
Aaron Jones.
Yeah. You're not going to, it's going to be much harder for you to find those guys in your rookie draft. So talking about modeling prospects, why do you think it's so important and what steps have you added to your model to change and improve it over the years?
Yeah, I think the number one thing, it's important because you're able to have an objective process of some sort that's not influenced by emotion. And then on top of that, and I think this is probably even more important, you can actually test it pretty easily, right? Whereas if you're going back and you're looking at how you graded while you're watching film, and this is nothing against people who do that because they do it very well, you're not going to have as strong of a process in nailing what you got right, what you got wrong, and how you can improve on that. But with a model, you can actually ask, you know, what am I actually trying to solve here? Because I don't think the answer is as simple as I'm looking for good players. I think that you should be looking for something more specific. And I think that's what's changed for me over the years in doing this. I mean, I've been modeling and looking at prospects for probably like 4 or 5 years now. And I think what's changed for me is that instead of saying, I'm just looking for a player who's good, and good players have done this historically in college football, I'm looking more at, okay, what is the goal that I'm really trying to solve? And what I'm trying to solve is, in my model now, is looking at first 3 years production, how well these guys did fantasy points wise. I have this solid goal that I'm trying to achieve, and I'm doing that via modeling, which you cannot do with just looking at film and using your eyes to do that, because you can find and draw similar conclusions. We can sit back and say DeAndre Swift is good, or Jerry Jeudy is good. But at the end of the day,
bold takes. Right. Jerry Jeudy is good.
Right. We're trying to we can all have draw those same conclusions, but what we're really trying to find is what is it that builds up into those first 3 years of fantasy production, and you're not able to really do that as well if you're just looking with your eyes as opposed to building a model out.
Well, and also, if you're not modeling stuff out, it's going to be very hard to quantitatively make decisions between positions. Yeah. So, like, I actually think a crazy interesting decision in non-super flex leagues this year in rookie drafts is going to be, what do you do at 103? I think 101 and 102 are just going to be Swift and Taylor in some order in every league. I mean, of course, not every league. Like, there are going to be weird, it's going to get squirrely here and there. But those guys are going to be the consensus 101, 102. However, when it gets to the 103, even accounting for draft capital, I think a really interesting decision is going to be, okay, do you take the third running back who goes, you know, whether that be Dobbins, whether that be Akers, whether that be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, or do you take Jeudy or Lamb? Where do you see that right now before we have the information of draft capital?
Yeah, and what I think's really interesting too, so with my model, like I'll build it, you know, I'll get a prospect score for these guys, and then I get a percentile rank for each player. And what you're able to do then is to objectively look at the depth of a certain position. So let's say, like, wide receiver, I think we all would say, okay, wide receiver's really deep. Therefore, it would be easier in a rookie draft and even in the NFL draft to maybe not use a higher draft capital pick on the position because you can get a guy later in the draft. But but it's going to bear out and show a lot, and it's going to be a lot clearer if you look at a model and you're looking at your percentile rankings and you see, oh, you know, Jerry Jeudy is a 96th percentile wide receiver, but I can get this 90th percentile wide receiver in the mid second round, whereas there's a massive drop off at running back, let's say, just as an example. I'm not saying
not saying that is the case this year, but just as an illustration.
You can use that and then sort of combine that with team need for your individual team. You know, typically I think the go-to answer for something like this is, if you're really, really planning for the future, you know, you're not winning this year, you're not winning in the next
year. You go Lamb or Jeudy.
Yeah, you go wide receiver. Whereas if you need that immediate production, because, you know, I mean, I've done studies on this. It's very, very clear that top half of rookie drafts, especially going running back, if you need production in year one, is absolutely, I mean, we all know this, that wide receiver.
Yeah, it's just they just go in and immediately get 180 touches right away. Yeah,
right. So it takes a lot more time for wide receivers to develop. And you don't really see the payoff with round one wide receivers and rookie drafts in general, usually until year three. And I mean that as in the true differentiation between the elite wide receivers to the next.
Yeah, year. They'll be like you could have, if you drafted Marquise Brown last year, you could have started him as a flex play sometimes. Yeah. And he had what did he finish? Like wide receiver 36 or something. Yeah. Like it's like he was usable, but he wasn't great. The one rookie wide receiver last year that you got a true slam dunk from was AJ Brown. And then I guess DK Metcalf was good as well, but you know, only 100 targets over the course of the season. So
And you're gonna see these first round wide receivers in rookie drafts not look a lot different in terms of first and even second year production as like a second round wide receiver rookie draft pick. But once that year three hits, that's typically where we see the differentiation really hit and that gap widen. And then you're gonna see, and it could hit in year two also, but that's where you see the AJ Browns really, really elevate and really become part of that DeAndre Hopkins tier. So if you're thinking longer term, definitely go wide receiver. If you're thinking shorter term, it's running back.
My answer for that question is very similar. I this year though, I actually, if you are undecided, right? Like say you happen to have the 103, but your team was like the sixth seed in the playoffs last year. And like, it's fine, but you know, you don't have McCaffrey, you don't have Michael Thomas, you don't have Travis Kelce. So you don't think your team is crazy good, but it's fine. I think this year you break the tie to the wide receivers, because I expect Lamb and Jeudy to, with draft capital, combine, and college production stuff, I expect them to be like 85th percentile or higher wide receiver prospects of like the last, like I expect them to be guys who compare to like the 2014 class of wide receivers. And I know that's crazy because we're just coming off this 2019 wide receiver class that like looked super average coming in, but I mean, it's like everyone from the 2019 wide receiver class hit except for Arcega Whiteside and N'Keal Harry. And N'Keal Harry is still, like, I was looking this morning, N'Keal Harry is still consensus, you know, top 50 ADP in dynasty leagues, like across multiple sites. So it's like last year's wide receiver class was crazy, and Lamb and Jeudy might return like better value than those guys.
Yeah, the crazy thing about last year's class too is that it ended up being crazy, or it at least projects to be crazy, and the production wasn't even there for these wide receivers. Like McLaurin, Mecole Hardman, even Metcalf to a degree didn't have that great of a production profile. So it was a very, very strange and outlier year for 2019. But I agree with you. I mean, I think Lamb and Jeudy both this year are better prospects than what we had in last year.
Last year. Yeah, like N'Keal Harry, who we all now are like, everyone, by this is a very funny thing on fantasy Twitter, everyone this time last year, dude, they loved N'Keal Harry.
Oh yeah,
I did. You did. We like, it's just like when you looked at things from a data perspective, he just was one of those guys that was like, this guy's a smash.
Yeah.
And he was a little bit slower than we thought at the combine, but like was fine. And then he gets drafted by a weird team, but with good draft capital. And then he gets hurt. And so you do really have to adjust things when guys get hurt in their rookie years. Like it is just historically shown that when you start getting injured, like for every Odell Beckham, there are 10 John Baldwins basically in terms of rookie year injuries.
Brashad Perrimans. Yeah. I mean, the thing that is so difficult is that we know draft capital matters. I mean, it's a huge part of my model. It's stupid if it's not a part of your model because it matters. Whether it's because those guys are going to get immediate volume or whether it's because there's an inherent embedded.
It's the bias from the team.
Yeah. But here's the problem with draft capital that can get you in trouble sometimes. And I think it might have happened last year with two guys in particular, those two guys being N'Keal Harry and Andy Isabella. And what happens is all you need is one team. You need one team to skew draft capital. And I'm not saying that N'Keal Harry is bad or anything like that. I liked N'Keal Harry. I loved Andy Isabella as well. But you have to wonder, at least wonder and think, that maybe Arizona was the only team that valued Andy Isabella in that way.
That high, yeah.
And then what that does is it just skews completely the way that you view this guy, because a lot of people were surprised when Isabella went where he went. I think people were moderately surprised even when N'Keal Harry went in the late first round. So that's always something.
Yeah. Non-film Twitter was like, yeah. Like real NFL Twitter was not on N'Keal Harry like that. That was right. Like a fantasy Twitter thing.
Yeah. I mean, look, whenever fantasy football, like, we have debates on Twitter all the time since the beginning of time between film and metrics with fantasy football. But we have to be realistic, and we know that the fantasy football world and touts and everyone who analyzes the game, we all skew analytical. I mean, if you look at dynasty rankings right now, you see Tyler Johnson and Bryan Edwards ranked really, really high in wide receiver rankings because they have these incredible production profiles. But that's not the way that teams are viewing them. That's not the way that film guys are necessarily viewing those guys right. either. So it just goes to show that, I mean, the fantasy world is still very much an analytically driven one because that's what we know. I mean, we're looking at numbers. It's a game about.
I mean, that's what we want. Like, we don't care how crisp N'Keal Harry's breaks are if he catches 90 passes for 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns a season. Like, we don't care if he looks horrible doing it. We just want those stats.
Yeah, we know what, you know, we're looking at what correlates to fantasy success, not what correlates to on the field success. And that's a big, big difference.
Yeah. So as of right now, do you have a strong take, Lamb versus Judy? We have their weights. We don't have their 40 times yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've kind of flip-flopped. I actually think Jalen Reagor's right there with them at this point too.
I mean, when he showed, like, people thought he was going to weigh 190 and he showed up to the combine at 206, I think. Yeah, dude, it was just like, "Oh, okay." Yeah,
he's thicker than we realized. I think Reagor's right there too. Reagor's kind of been ascending for me in the way that I've been thinking about him and viewing him. I started the offseason when I started prospecting. I had Lamb first. Now I have Judy ahead of Lamb. My model likes Judy a little bit more because of strength of competition and the teammate stuff. But I can make an argument either way. Like, Lamb has better production in my model. I really don't have a strong preference. So I'm looking at this situation as – those three guys, I'm putting Reagor in there too. I do care about, you know, I try to ignore landing spot a little bit more at wide receiver because talent usually wins out more at that position than it does at running back. But I do think that if it's this close and you don't have a strong take either way, you can use that as a tiebreaker pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm probably going to weigh where guys land pretty heavily when I'm going to go do my drafts. Really interesting, though. I have a draft that we've talked about it on this podcast before in the Scott Barrett League where we draft before the NFL draft, which is like, dude, it's sick. Danny Kelly got Mecole Hardman in the fourth round of our rookie draft last year. And like, I think, so one of the things I did in this draft was I traded up basically. I think that my accuracy with second round picks in this format where it's before the draft is going to be the same as my fourth round. Like, I think without that input of draft capital, it's like big time throwing darts. Yeah. But one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to give myself a chance in pretty much every rookie draft I'm in to get one of Lamb or Judy. Cause like, I think they're both going to go in the top 15. I think the NFL like loves these dudes.
Yeah.
And I think what I like most about both of them is like, they're not like a slot wide receiver or an outside wide receiver. They both played like every wide receiver position in college. Like, I think when they get drafted, there's like a chance that one or both of them, depending on draft capital, immediately comes in and is like a top 12 wide receiver in dynasty just based off of like, if, I mean, imagine if, Judy goes to, I don't know. I don't have a, like, I was going to say like the Chiefs, but like, that's not going to happen. But like, if he just goes to some offense, like the Falcons, right? Like the right. Falcons. And also another really interesting, and this is not on our show sheet, but the wide receiver position is getting old, dude. Like I was looking at this the other day, and outside of Michael Thomas, I think you could argue that like every wide receiver that went in the first two rounds in redraft in 2019, Thomas would be the only one who's going to be there in 2021.
Well, the reason is because we haven't seen a good draft class since that 2014 class, like a really good one. Yeah. Like, and that's why like we're almost seeing the residuals of that. And we're seeing, you know, these guys who are now in their late 20s, who are really effective and good. But I think that you can make arguments for, if you're not a win now team in dynasty, easy arguments to be made that you should be selling guys like DeAndre Hopkins and Davante Adams, just because you can, you know, they're some of the top players in dynasty, right? And we're getting a crop of these young guys where you can at least load up and try to hit on some of them.
I mean, yeah. So Hopkins and Adams, they're 27. Mike Evans is like an old 27, right? Like he's like you watch that guy run and you're like, oh, he's 32 already. Yeah.
Like you're going to get a couple more years of peak performance from these guys. You know, don't get me wrong. Like, you're still going to get probably three more years of like great DeAndre Hopkins and Davante Adams, what have you. But you know, you're also thinking about this class or these rookies. And I mean, this class is unbelievable, both at running back and wide receiver. And if you can gobble up multiple instances and picks to try to hit on these guys, all of a sudden you have more equity than what you would get even out of those top players in dynasty.
Yeah. This is another really interesting question on this topic. Julio Jones is 31 years old. He was still good last year, and actually, in a very un-Julio Jonesy way, he actually just played through all of his injuries.
Yeah.
It wasn't a scenario where he was leaving every game early. Like, he actually put together like a very good fantasy season last year. He is age 31. Do you think that he is closer to like a really cheap buy as opposed to just selling him for a second round pick and Tyler Boyd? Like what side of that do you come down on?
Yeah, I try to obtain elite production. And I'm saying that as in, Julio is going to give us elite production next year, let's say, right? Like, he has one more year plus of elite production.
I mean, maybe he goes full Fitzgerald and just becomes like just a possession wide receiver.
Yeah. So there's that with Julio. Whereas if you're giving up Julio for multiple assets who you know will not be, or the likelihood of those assets not being elite is pretty high and not giving you that true edge, like a Tyler, like, look, I'm a Pitt guy. I graduated from Pitt, and I know that, you know, I love Tyler Boyd, but I know that Tyler Boyd's not going to be someone who's going to give me top 10 production year in and year out. He's fine to have in dynasty. I love Tyler Boyd. I think that he's great, but you know that a player like him isn't going to give you that elite production. And then you add in some draft picks that may not, you know, the likelihood of them hitting and giving you that type of elite production is small. All of that combined, you know, what's the point? Like, why sell Julio Jones at that point? So I think because of the way the market probably views Julio, it would probably lean buy more than sell, even though he's as old as he is, because I just look for that elite production in some
way. I mean, you could for sure get him right now with this will be the cheapest he would have been since he was a rookie, right? Like,
oh, easily, yeah.
Yeah, like you'll be able to get him for, like, you'll be able to get him for four quarters, right? Like, you would be able to trade four quarters for the dollar that is Julio Jones, and that, I'm sure there are some dynasty teams where that, you know, that does really make sense. So up until this point, we've not talked about my favorite format of dynasty, which is the Superflex best ball leagues.
That's right.
I mean, we talk about them on these shows all the time. And seriously, guys, if you're not in one or multiples of them, you should really do them, because they are the nuts. Like, just not having to sweat stuff during the year, but being able to trade and draft all offseason is the best. So I had Rich on the show, and we talked a little bit about Tua as a Superflex draft asset. Where do you think his ADP will settle in that format, and where do you think he should go?
I mean, I think it's going to probably settle around I still think he's going to probably in a lot of drafts still go ahead of like a Swift and go ahead of some of those guys. I think that Burrow is going to be the 101 in Superflex. And I think that you can make arguments that Tua is the 102. I think it really depends again on where that particular team's going to be. Because I don't think we should walk into this draft / 2020 season assuming that Tua is going to be playing and giving you production in fantasy, right? Because of the hip. So the way that I view it is, look, I personally devalue the quarterback position in super flex and in obviously regular one quarterback leagues. But the difference in super flex dynasty, especially, is that they're gold, right? Just having that asset.
I mean, you can trade any quarterback who's going to project to start 16 games for a first round pick.
Yeah.
Derek Carr, first round pick. Like it's just how it works. It's just because the supply and demand is not there. And the best ball part actually in a weird way makes them even more valuable because every team thinks I need three to replace injuries and bye weeks. Like yeah, it's just how it goes.
When you could easily make the argument that it should have the opposite effect.
Because yes.
you're not having to actually guess which wide receivers or which
right. You don't have to start Jalen Richard, right? Like you'll just get your best bench score.
I think people misunderstand the fact that like running backs and wide receivers, especially in PPR formats, can and will absolutely outscore quarterbacks in a given week. So that's a main reason why to not overvalue them yourself. But you have to understand what the market is saying and what the market wants. And at the end of the day, quarterbacks are gold value-wise. So to me, if you're not winning this year and if you're really planning ahead, Tua makes a lot of sense at 102. If you are winning this year, I'd go with a running back instead. But I do think he's at least in that conversation after Burrow.
So the way I think things should work out is I think that whichever running back goes first should be the 102. I think it should be Burrow, Swift, and or Taylor, then yeah. Tua. I think Tua will play this upcoming season. Maybe not 16 games.
Yeah, I don't know the effectiveness. Yeah. I don't think we should bank on that kind of production is basically the point that there's so many question marks around that situation that, you know, I wouldn't be jumping in with my 102 and getting Tua if I'm in a win now mode.
Yeah. I think something that is interesting in addition in this situation is that there's like a very real chance that Tua actually ends up being the better fantasy quarterback than Burrow.
Absolutely.
Because if this hip turns out to be something that he recovers from and it's like no ill effects, he might run for 500 yards a season and Burrow will not do that. And like that, you know, we're just, you know, we've talked about this a million times, but running, you know, it does just completely changes the quarterback position. I mean, 2019 was the year of running, just destroying the quarterback position, you know, Lamar, Kyler, Dak, Josh Allen, like these guys, these guys all had, I mean, Lamar had a great passing season.
Even Gardner Minshew was relevant to what he could do on the ground. Yeah.
Like it completely changes things. Actually, so I haven't talked about this with anyone yet either. What do you think the value of Lamar Jackson is in a single quarterback dynasty league? Like let's say you knew Lamar was going to be great. You took him in the third round or the second round or whatever of your dynasty draft 2 years ago. You sat on him and you're like, man, I have this golden goose. What do you think his value is?
I would love to sell him is the way that I would view it, right? Like, I don't think we're going to see a fantasy season from Lamar Jackson to the degree that we saw this past year, not only because what they did was relatively unsustainable and we usually see fluctuations in the amount of touchdowns a team score year over year and the touchdown rate he had at 9% is otherworldly / very, very difficult to replicate. So even though Lamar Jackson I feel more confident that Lamar Jackson can maintain his elite fantasy production more than maybe not Patrick Mahomes because he's arguably going to be the best thing that we've ever seen at quarterback.
See, that's so interesting. I actually think that you could do a swap right now where you traded Lamar for Mahomes and they would give you something else. I actually think you could be
you get Mahomes plus.
you get Mahomes plus a second round pick, or you get Mahomes and, you know, Justice Hill, like, you know, sleeper running back that you like.
Yeah, I would feel fine about that, because obviously you're going to get the long. I think that naturally you'd probably get the longevity from Mahomes.
Mahomes is just, he's going to be 15 years of being the best player we've ever seen.
Like you won't have to worry about it for a while. So yeah, like I'm totally down with that. I mean, my general feel is that if you can ever get rid of a quarterback, whether it be in a single quarterback league, whether it be in redraft or dynasty, and you can get something ultra significant for that player, you end up doing it because of what we see year to year with the position. And that's me saying that, recognizing fully that Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes both are probably going to be in their own tier in the immediate future. But I just think that that's an easy move to make just because of the importance that running back and wide receiver.
Okay. What about in Superflex? Do you think there's not a fair deal you can put together for him? Like, so in a league that you and I are in together, yeah. I have Lamar, Dak, Jameis, and Teddy Bridgewater. So we expect to have, you know, 3.5 starting quarterbacks, yeah. But we have no wide receivers.
Right. And we have a lot of wide receivers, Davis.
I'm not trading you for Keenan Allen. I thought about it and I can't do it. I can't betray my brand like that. But basically, the buying power of Jameis is not where I value him at. Like, I think that Jameis in Superflex Dynasty should be worth a top 15-ish wide receiver just in and of himself. And the market doesn't reflect that at all, right? No. Like, there just has been no buying on that. So maybe Jameis is a good buy if you're in these formats right now. If you can actually get Jameis, as cheap as it seems people are valuing him, I think he's a great buy. But this has led me to being like, well, what's stopping me from trading Lamar Jackson for the Herschel Walker package? And the answer is, trading Lamar Jackson away, it feels heretical, right? Like, it just feels like something you don't want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those moves where, like, theoretically and, like, objectively, it's
you
smart.
Should do it. Yeah. Yeah.
But then when Lamar Jackson goes off, you're just going to be so...
You're just like, great. Awesome.
Yeah. So it's just one of those deals where, like there is a psychology component to fantasy and how well you mentally can handle these moves and such. Because Like realistically, I think that we even offered up like a Davante Adams type package deal to get Lamar from you guys. And it's a situation where like it's a lot easier to get rid of Davante Adams right now mentally, right? Like if you look at the market, like we could put together a fair trade and say like,
you could say this is 1-to-1. Every piece here equates in a super fair way. But psychologically, the person trading away Lamar Jackson is just like, but he's Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and I'm fairly risk averse in that way. Like I get deals done all the time in Dynasty because I'm not afraid to give away good players, but I'm very afraid of getting rid of good players who are coming off MVP seasons and could literally break fantasy.
Could literally break fantasy. Yeah.
Like I'm fearful of that for sure.
Okay. So I want to round back. I want to come back to the rookie guys, because this is the first time I have seen even kind of like mainstream fantasy analysts talk about how teammates' production impacted each other. Like in years past, there was none of this.
Yeah.
But we've seen that, you know, the talented teammate stuff come up with Ruggs, with Judy, even with T. Higgins. And then on the converse, we saw this happen with Rager, where people are like, this guy's 600 receiving yards. Like, what are we doing taking him in the first round? Yeah. And then people look at TCU and they're like, oh my gosh, this team is just a flaming dumpster garbage fire of a football team. So how do you deal, you know, from a data perspective, how do you deal with someone like Ruggs who, I mean, if we're just being kind, he never really produced in college, right? Like that just, he was fine. He was a good tertiary wide receiver for one of the best football teams in the country. But at no point would you ever be like, oh, well, this guy dominated college football.
Yeah. So let me try to get my thought, like, let me try to make this coherent. Cause I think that there's a lot of angles to go about like the importance of teammate score and whether or not it's a thing or not. So I've tested this with my model. I couldn't find a lot of signal with the methods that I was at least using for teammate score, meaning good players generally seem to just produce, right, regardless of their environment. But I also don't think that means that it doesn't matter. Like I said, good players generally will see good market share numbers no matter their circumstances, right? Almost every successful NFL wide receiver over the last decade was at least moderately successful in college. So if we look at someone like Henry Ruggs, regardless of his situation, it does not look great for his potential in the league. Like his numbers are not good.
No, they're bad.
They're very bad. But let's assume that Ruggs, looking back, like when we look back 3 years from now, let's just assume that he was in one of the most crowded situations that we've ever seen a wide receiver be in.
Yeah, that Waddle gets drafted in the second round. Devonta Smith gets drafted. Right. Let's just assume all of this.
Right. I think that we're not seeing signal in our models and in our modeling because we need that hindsight in order to be accurate with what that environment actually is for these wide receivers. We need to know for sure and for certain that these wide receivers are indeed in these crowded environments, because we are going into a draft and we're saying Jerry Jeudy's really good, and we have all these guys who aren't even coming out of Alabama this year who could be first and second round picks next year, and Ruggs didn't produce as a result of that. We don't know that for sure, though. We don't know for sure that even Jerry Jeudy's going to hit. Like we say confidently, like this is all a game of probability here, right? So the reason I say, I kind of view teammate score. I have it in my model just to like reference mostly. It's there to a degree. Like it's weighed in some way, but like I said, the method that I do it isn't very strong. I can't find like a good signal doing it, but. What I do is I kind of view it the same way that I view like return yards, because when I input return yards into my model, I can't make it matter. Right. But I know that it does matter. I've talked to
guys that are sick returners in college generally end up being like better NFL players.
Yeah. So I've talked to Rich Rebar about this a good bit, and what we've kind of gone back and forth with and concluded is that like return yards, a good example of like why return yards matter is someone like Deontay Johnson, who gets drafted in the third round, had fairly bad market share numbers during his final seasons. He was fine. He wasn't like an amazing prospect, like physically and production wise. But you look at Deontay Johnson, he then goes in the third round or wherever he went. And he went higher than what I think a lot of people thought. You know, they weren't like pinpointing Deontay Johnson at that time in the draft and saying that a team really needs to get Deontay Johnson. But post-draft, you just look at his profile and you're like, oh, he has a receiving a return yard element to his production profile that wasn't necessarily, you know, thought about whenever you were looking at his production. And I think the same way with teammate score and the way that we look at teammates. You can say, this guy got drafted. Henry Ruggs, like, let me just say this. In my model, I look back to every wide receiver since 2006, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are 10 first-round wide receivers that have a stat score that's below zero, which is pretty bad because it's referencing every player that was either drafted or went to the combine since 2006. So zero being average, if there are 10 below zero, that means they were well below average players, right? All of those players did not hit. Like the best player among those guys is Ted Ginn. So that alone tells me that,
man, Ruggs is very Ted Ginn-y. From just like, if you were just like, okay, this guy, what, not super productive in college, really fast, like that's very Ginn-y.
It's scary to think about like the comps that we have for Ruggs, but I also think that the sample size is fairly small too, that we probably shouldn't draw these like insane concrete conclusions based on that. And then the other thing that I think is the most important with Henry Ruggs is that we're seeing film people / scouts tout Henry Ruggs and love Henry Ruggs. But
I kind of love Henry Ruggs.
But here's the thing though. We're looking at what impacts fantasy production. This goes back to what I talked about at the beginning, where we're having a goal in mind whenever we're modeling. And the goal in mind is fantasy production. Whereas scouts are looking at on-field impact that these guys can have for their individual NFL teams. And if you look back at these guys who can stretch the field vertically and make a difference in that way, doesn't always show up in the stat sheet. DeSean Jackson arguably has been one of the most impactful wide receivers in the NFL over the last decade. But from a fantasy perspective, we're not going out trying to get DeSean Jackson. Like, when were you ever sitting back and saying, I gotta buy DeSean Jackson right now?
Yeah, never. But he is a guy who always created space. Like offenses that he was in had higher YPAs just by the virtue of him being on the field.
Exactly, exactly. So that's what I think is going on with Henry Ruggs, is that scouts are saying that's the kind of impact that this guy can have, but I don't know if production is necessarily going to match that, and that's okay.
You know, I mean, even Ted Ginn does that for the Saints. Like, Ted Ginn literally is useless for fantasy, but he creates all this space on one side of the field for Michael Thomas and the running backs.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out what works for fantasy. Scouts are figuring out what works for real teams. Sometimes that doesn't always, you know, a lot of times it does align. You know, a lot of times we're like, oh, A.J. Brown's really good. Scouts are like, A.J. Brown's really good. Oh,
really
good.
He's really good
and he's productive. But it doesn't, you know, sometimes the Henry Ruggs happens. And right now it's just really, really exaggerated because of the situation he was in, the type of player that he is, in the draft capital that's going to go with it.
Are there any other guys that, you know, the public that that fantasy Twitter seems really high on that you're just like, this ain't it, Chief?
I think Brandon Ayuk is one guy who I'm not really that into.
I think that's going to change after the combine. I'm not expecting him to. I don't think he's going to do very well.
It might. I he's just a red flag prospect to me. He didn't come out early. Didn't break out until he was a senior.
The early declare stuff, that's been one of the things that has been most eye-opening to me. It's just like, if you don't declare early, forget about it.
So I think he's fine, but I don't think he's fringe wide receiver five fine. You know what I mean? Like getting, because that's where some people are talking him and putting him. And then the other guy I talked about earlier is Bryan Edwards. He scares me a little bit, not just because of the foot injury, but again, you look at the fantasy industry and the way that these rankings bear out, usually these crazy market share guys, regardless of draft capital, will still go higher than they should. And guys who we fall in love early, we have sort of like an anchoring effect despite draft capital. Good example is last year with Kelvin Harmon. People loved Kelvin Harmon. And then he goes three rounds later than Terry McLaurin. And then people were still ranking Kelvin Harmon way above Terry McLaurin, despite the fact that Washington picked McLaurin so much further ahead than Kelvin Harmon. But with Bryan Edwards, you know, I have some hesitation. His numbers are out of control. Like, his market share numbers are great. But I looked at his charting from PFF, and he ranked 178th in deep ball receptions last year. He had four deep ball receptions for South Carolina. The majority of what he did was on screens. And it's good in that what market share is trying to capture is get, you know, players getting the ball, and that's a
signal. Or just how good was he relative to his bad teammates?
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so if a player is getting the ball a lot, then his market share numbers are going to look better, and that's a good sign that he's a good player. But at the same time, you know, teams might be a little wary if he's not catching deep balls, if he's not really doing stuff at all levels of the field. So I think Edwards is a little bit overvalued, because right now, if you look at a site like Dynasty League Football and their rookie rankings or their ADP, he's like a fringe top five wide receiver in Dynasty, but I don't think that that's where teams are going to necessarily value him. So he's another guy that sort of jumped out.
Yeah. I think those are pretty fair. All right. I want to end it with this. Three of the guys that you are most trying to acquire in Dynasty Leagues throughout the course of the off season, who are some of the names that come to mind?
One's Curtis Samuel.
Interesting. I was not expecting that.
Yeah. So I usually, like, only in the last couple of years, I've gotten more in tune and understanding the hybrid prospects, you know, like the guys who are, we don't know what they are and we can't really comprehend what they are, but.
Well, just there's a bigger role in the NFL for those guys now than there's ever been at any time.
Yeah. It's becoming a lot easier to be like, okay, we can feel confident that they can fit in some way. And now they have Matt Rhule there, and I feel confident that he could potentially do something with them. But then you look at what Curtis Samuel did last year. I think there's enough people in the fantasy world and managers in the fantasy world where they still don't dig super deep into metrics and into what guys did. Last year, Curtis Samuel, ninth in the NFL in air yards, 51st in receiving yards. There's just a lot of unrealized production there. And I think we can pinpoint the fact that they had really bad quarterback production as to why. I don't think it's a Curtis Samuel problem as much as it was the system and the quarterbacks that were playing. I think the fear right now is that they would get someone in the draft and that would bump, you know, it's a deep wide receiver class that would bump Curtis Samuel down a bit.
They have so many needs. I don't think that's real. I don't think they're going to take a wide receiver.
That's exactly how I feel. They're in complete rebuild mode right now. And wide receiver doesn't seem like that's
They have two, they like, regardless of what do you think about Curtis Samuel for fantasy, they have two like very good NFL wide receivers.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm not scared about that and why I think you can still buy Curtis. And then you're also buying Samuel right now at a time of complete ambiguity at the quarterback
position. As a quarterback position.
For Carolina. So you could probably get a little bit of a discount as a result. So he's one. Another one's Jay Sternberger. And this is really. This is really just like, why is this guy ranked? His startup ADP is tight end 24. Last year, he was a 75th overall pick in the NFL draft. He had a 92nd percentile dominator rating. Jimmy Graham's not going to be there next year. The team lacks pass catching options in general, even if they get someone in this year's draft. So he's a low end tight end 2 in startups right now. He's still 23 years old. I think that he's worth the dart throw at that cost. And then probably my favorite buy right now is Diontae Johnson. Talked about him a little bit earlier, but look at what he did.
So you just think, do you think that James Washington is just like, they tried it and it's not like, he's just not going to be a guy who commands 100 targets?
Yeah, I don't think, look, I like James Washington coming out too, because he had crazy, crazy production with Mason Rudolph in college.
I mean, I'm a noted Big 12 homer, but yeah. That stuff happens in the Big 12. Yeah, it's absolutely. Just one of those things.
I adjust for that in my model. But when he was coming out, I didn't adjust for it enough. I didn't mind James Washington coming out, but the fact that Diontae Johnson essentially outperformed James Washington during Washington's second year versus Diontae Johnson's rookie year. And then we talked about how good the rookie wide receiver class was last year. Diontae Johnson led all NFL rookie wide receivers in receptions with really crappy quarterbacks. He had almost a 19% target share. And then all of a sudden, Ben Roethlisberger's coming back. We know that with Roethlisberger in recent history, the Steelers have been a fairly pass-heavy offense. So if he maintains that 19% target share, all of a sudden you've got a guy over the next couple of years until Roethlisberger retires who should be able to give you pretty strong production. And then hopefully the Steelers can solve the quarterback situation and transition to a new era for them pretty seamlessly. But I also think he's good. I think Diontae Johnson's a good player. So all of it combined, I mean, he's right now being drafted in the wide receiver 40s in startups. I think that's a slam dunk buy.
Yeah. I like buying one of those secondary Steelers wide receivers, I think. And like, I have no problem with your analysis that Diontae Johnson is the better one of the two, but I think that Steelers players right now might just be undervalued. It seems like the market is treating James Conner like he's almost for sure going to be replaced. My sense is probably that that's not going to happen yet. I think that roster needs more than their roster is not going to be fixed by drafting Cam Akers or Darrington Evans or whatever.
They also don't have early round equity in the draft. So,
right. So
it's going to be a lot more difficult for them to get one of the blue chip running backs in this year's class. If that's, you know, and I think that's the main way you would supplant someone like James Conner. They might add someone, you know, in the fifth round.
I guess if they like sign Duke Johnson or something, like I'm not right. even, that's not even like a Steelers Melvin, thing to
Melvin,
do.
They go like Melvin Gordon. Oh, Melvin Gordon,
I mean, can you imagine how tilted would you be?
I would tilt. So
I think that, and I mean, obviously, well, so it's so interesting with Smith-Schuster, right? Like, because not only was Smith-Schuster bad from a raw numbers perspective last year, but like we're talking like market shares,
it was
yards per target relative to his teammates. Like you can run as many pro football screens as you want, pro football reference screens as you want. You will not find a player that was that dominant at that young of an age who then had a season as poorer. Like even like look at Josh Gordon, right? Who is the guy who would always come up when you ran Smith-Schuster stuff before. Coming off of a 2-year break from football where he was suspended, he was better than Smith-Schuster was last year. Like what do you do with Juju? Like the answer?
Yeah. So I mean I do think the injuries had something to do with his lack of production. And then obviously, you know, that you have a quarterback situation where maybe there was a better rapport naturally between Roethlisberger and him versus these other guys. But I would lean, you know, if I lean buy or sell with Juju, I'd probably lean sell.
I mean, he's the thing is, he's still expensive. Like, this is still a guy who goes in like the second round of startup drafts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're getting that kind of equity back for someone like Juju, I mean, I'm all for it. Like, straight up, who do you like more between Juju and DJ Moore?
Oh, I mean, DJ Moore, I think, has an argument for being the number two receiver in Dynasty.
DJ Moore is still being ranked as a fringe top 10. You know, he's in the top 10, but he's in the lower part of that top 10 for wide receivers. And so,
I would snap DJ over Smith-Schuster right now.
Right. So that's, you know, I think that's the big, the main way to look at something like this is that you just move down the wide receiver list and the wide receiver rankings. And you find guys who you would like either straight up more or, yeah. You know, like right now, Dynasty League Football's ADP, Juju is seventh overall in startups and at wide receiver. And DJ Moore is wide receiver 9.
That's wild.
Market value, like ADP wise, you could get DJ Moore plus for Juju Smith-Schuster.
And I love Juju. Juju, I ranked Juju number 1 overall at wide receiver last year.
Yeah,
like I thought he was so, but it's just like, you got to readjust with new information, right? Like you have to, And maybe this will be stupid, right? Maybe Juju just needed to get healthy and play with Ben, and he'll have 1,800 yards and 15 touchdowns. Like, that's certainly something that I think is in the realm of outcomes. But I just was so bummed out watching him last year.
Oh, it was rough. I had a couple drafts where I went Juju OBJ, and it's just like,
oh, the Davis-Matic draft plan from 2019?
Like, those teams just died. Like, they're just done. Right?
Like, we started those two in an FFPC main event team.
Yeah, I remember that.
There's no amount of waiver wiring that's going to save you if you start your draft. It's just like, you're just dusted.
Yeah, I do a neighborhood league with people in my neighborhood because I'm a suburban dad now. I do this as my job.
You're the fantasy guy.
Right. And so I start my draft off Juju OBJ. It's a 14-team league and a 14-team league too. There's no coming back. Like, I even drafted Austin Eckler in that league. It didn't matter.
It just doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter when you get like no. And the more frustrating thing was that those dudes wouldn't sit out games.
They were
hurt, but they just kept playing. So it would just be like four for 40 every week. Like, great. Thanks for coming out.
You had to use them every week.
Oh, fantasy football. So the Curtis Samuel thing is really interesting. I am early last offseason, he was a guy you could buy cheap. Yeah. In dynasty leagues, and then Matt Harmon and Big Fantasy started to really tout him, and he like meteoric rise, like his like ADP went up from like the 140s to like the 60s and 70s throughout the course of the offseason. And I think it's maybe a very similar situation to Juju, where it's just like, I mean, the quarterback play was so bad, and DJ Moore, love him. But I mean, the guy does just run like slant routes. Like, he runs routes that even Kyle Allen can throw.
Yeah, Curtis Samuel had the second lowest catch rate on deep balls last year among 50-plus target wide. There's 79 50-plus target wide receivers. The only guy who was worse was Deshaun Hamilton. But I don't think you can sit back and say that's all Curtis Samuel. I mean, obviously, there's inaccuracy to. I mean, catch rate's a stupid statistic, but it goes to show that the inaccuracy at the quarterback position played a role. But if you look at where Curtis Samuel is being valued right now, ADP wise, he's wide receiver 44, right? He's ranked below AJ Green.
Like that's just silly stuff. Yeah. Like that's just dumb.
He's ranked just above Bryan Edwards and Darius Slayton. Like, I would take Curtis Samuel over Darius Slayton.
Darius Slayton is going to be like a trivia answer in like 6 years. Like, Darius Slayton is not a serious dynasty asset.
If there's one person or one player who has been a strong, you know, who has at least a lot of love out there, or some love out there from that rookie class last year, an ascending talent, if you will, that's going to lose that could lose that in the draft, it's definitely Darius Slayton.
I mean, or he just plays with Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, and Golden Tate, and Saquon Barkley, and he might just get 42 targets over the course of this upcoming season, and like, that's life.
much better best ball asset, but still it's a, right. he's a very, very difficult player to,
I mean, he might be the sixth option on that offense. Like it's just, it's like tough. Daniel Jones might have more rushing attempts than he gets targets.
Yeah. And I was higher on him last year whenever he came out, only it was really just because he was drafted and New York didn't have anything at wide receiver.
Yeah.
But he wasn't that great of a prospect aside from he had some speed. He can, you know, he's another guy who I fear is more of that archetype of someone who fits real football a lot better than fantasy football.
Yeah. All right. Well, there we go. JJ, tell people what you guys have going on over at NumberFire.
Yeah, content every day. I'm doing XFL stuff, which is fun.
Yes.
Love me some XFL. So doing that, I got my podcast, the Late Round Podcast as well. But yeah, I'm just pumped for the NFL draft to get going.
Pumped for the draft, pumped for rookie drafts. We'll have you back on after the draft, and we'll re-go through some of these prospects. Everyone, make sure to check out JJ's stuff over on numberfire.com. Listen to his podcast, the Late Round Podcast. It's very good and very informative, and we will be back next week.